Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Knowing that ultimately it's God who does the healing, Dr. Medici acts as the maestro, orchestrating a person's health through right timing and right therapies, using traditional, natural, alternative, and spiritual practices. Dr. Medici says it's time for people to wake up to their innate potential to heal and to be given a doctor who can orchestrate that healing. Dr. Medici is currently working toward his PhD in biochemistry at Long Beach University, with additional study in acupuncture, kinesiology, and quantum medicine. He's the curriculum director of the Santa Monica Shiatsu School. And now, here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. Good morning. I am Dr. Vincent Medici. This is Straight Talk on Health. You're going to get it straight today like you always do. Part two, the annual checkup. You trust that your doctors are taking care of your health. And although I agree they're well-intentioned, here's the problem. Your annual checkup, the one you pay for, the one you pay those ultra-expensive, especially now, thanks to you-know-who, extremely expensive insurance premiums, that annual checkup, sorry, it's not cutting it. Today I'm going to give you 20 things you want to look for before you get disease. And this is the problem. The problem is what they look for in your annual checkup. Especially the blood work. I'm really going to point out that the blood work, the chemistry panel and the hematology panel, it is so narrow in its scope. Why? What's the science behind that? By the time your blood shows deficiency or excess, there's something wrong. The framework through which you get these tests are based upon the beginning of disease. It's not preventative. Preventative medicine sees these things coming a mile away. Preventative medicine sees the terrain go into an imbalance, so a year, 2 years, five, 10 years before you get sick, the signals are already being registered, recorded, and pointing out. That's the way you have to start thinking. I want you to stretch yourself today, and I want you to imagine a world where the next checkup you go to, that you would pay that insurance premium for, checks the 20 things that I am going to tell you to check today. And if unfortunately that's not what your insurance premiums cover, we'll take some extra insurance and get into real holistic medicine. Number one, again, everything I mentioned today, everything, all 20, and we're going to whiz today because I want to get through 20. All 20 of these are backed by hard science, not esoteric holistic quackery. Number one, blood viscosity. If you're new to the show, get to the website, please. If you're not new to the show, you're already on the website. If possible, that's straighttalk.cc. Almost every one of the items I'm going to mention today is backed up in the literature section. Go to the tabs at the top of the website, press radio literature, and click on. You're going to see about 20 pictures or so. Those 20 pictures are there for you to follow the show. Those pictures are there for you to go back and listen to the show again, which you're going to need to. This is not simple medicine. This is the art of holistic medicine. And we're going to bend your brain a little bit. So here we go. Number one, blood viscosity. If you listened to the show last week, I simply said, so I'm not going to go into it in much detail today, but look at that picture there. Picture number one, the automatic blood viscosity test. We have machines to measure this. Hematologists understand this. Long before you need a blood thinner, we can see the blood getting too thick. And that thickness is sometimes measured by prothrombin time, which is the adhesibility between the platelets. And here's the subtlety. Here's the nuance for you healthcare practitioners. Catch this. When we say viscosity of blood, we're not just talking about platelet adhesion. We're talking about the sum total of all the garbage, sludge, sediments, particulates in the blood. That is a distinct measurement from platelet adhesion. You see this when people have strokes. When people have strokes, embolic strokes, we give them Coumadin. We give them Coumadin, pat them on the back with the insurance that they're not going to have another stroke because we've thinned their blood. We thin their blood so extremely that they hemorrhage all over their body. Sometimes they have brain hemorrhages because we give them too much Coumadin. Well, certainly Coumadin does help on some level, but you see, Stroke is the third leading cause of death in the world, in the United States today. And what's the reason? Most of those people are already on Coumadin, so Coumadin doesn't really work. Well, not as well as anyone intended it to. Why? Because Coumadin decreases platelet adhesion. The thickness of the blood, what causes a stroke. The thickness of the blood, what doesn't allow drainage and thus implies the buildup of toxicity into the cell and around the cell. That viscosity of blood is not just a function of platelet adhesion. It's a function of the stasis of the blood. The blood does not drain the site. That's all I'm going to say today. The rest of you that don't understand fully, listen to last week's show. If you're driving, I'll describe it as best I can. If not, get on the website, straighttalk.cc. Number two, biliary patency. Need I say more? Those of you on the picture, look at picture number two. Look at the picture of the liver. That's a cross-section of the liver. If you cut the liver open, there are these microscopic little passageways, the bile canaliculi. And if they're clear, they become much bigger and much bigger. And finally, it all empties from the liver into the gallbladder and then into your intestines. And if you have patency, meaning if you have heavy flow, no congestion, a clear highway, if you've got that, if you've achieved that, if you've brought yourself to that place, your doctor wants to know that. Your medical doctor should be checking that. That physical exam, that clinical exam, that exam using technology should take note of whether you're moving enough bile. And for those of you scientists or medical doctors in the audience, here's the deal, gentlemen. Bile, of course, always moves. That's why the stool is colored. But it's the rate. It's the amount. It's the copiousness of the flow. It's the ability. You really see pathology when you stress the system. That's what a coffee enema is. That's what it is when you ingest olive oil. You stress the biliary system. That's why these things are so important. It tells us, can the biliary system flow copiously? And of course, if it can, all sorts of principles in hematology, osmosis, diffusion across membranes, ignite the download or the dissolution of congested sediment at faster rates from the intercellular fluid into the blood, in through the biliary system, and out the body, as long as that flow is copious. Does the public understand? We are not making these things up. We are not exaggerating their claims. And number two, on your physical exam, should be, does the bile flow copiously? How thick is the blood? I want you to meditate on that. Wrap your mind around those two concepts because they occur if they're dysfunctioned, if they're deregulated, if those entities are not proper. That sets the terrain up for disease. Number three, the infamous pH. As you alkalize, your cells pull more oxygen in. Simple. Take your pHs, push them into an alkaline state, whether it's saliva, whether it's in the urine, whether you want to join that debate is all in a sense irrelevant to the fact that we know as the intercellular fluid gets more alkaline, the cell will absorb more oxygen. More oxygen means less damage to the cell. More oxygen means more efficiency. Less that you have to put in and more ATP that that cell can pump out. And that ATP, of course, drives what? Function and repair. So to make the cell more efficient, one of the things that cell demands is a higher, more alkaline intercellular pH for reasons already stated. Bingo number three in that physical exam should be a check as to what your, not your blood pH, but your first morning urine pH. If not, at least some sensitivity as to whether the body, in whatever way we can ascertain, is starting to push the intercellular fluid into too acidic a state. A consideration, a vital consideration, a vital reality, except that we can debate, and I agree, as far as the hard science is concerned, we can all debate whether or not the litmus paper on the saliva or the litmus paper on the first morning pH in the urine really represents that push towards alkalinity. Whether it does or it doesn't is not the point. The point is that this should be a consideration, and the body should experiment pushing itself as macrobiotics and acid alkaline, and Hermanni Hara pointed out, towards the more alkaline intracellular fluid, measurable or not. Are you damp? Are you filled with mucus? When your doctor looks at you, blood viscosity, biliary patency, the pH, the amount of mucus, congestion through the lymph that the patient's presenting with, it's another clear-cut sign. Because mucus is produced to irritation. Irritation means inflammation. Whether the GI tract is inflamed, or whether all the cells of your body are inflamed, or whether one specific organ is inflamed, the body produces mucus to buffer. The body produces mucus to sequester. Many inflammatory processes are combined with the production of mucus. Mucus is a protective response on the body's behalf to trap infection, to trap exudate, to trap dead cells. Mucus is produced to sequester and isolate, encapsulate the kind of garbage that the body inherently doesn't want being spread. So you get up in the morning and you're blowing mucus. You get a good deep massage and you blow mucus out your body. You stretch deeply. You do any of these cleanses, from the lemon juice cleanse to the vegetable cleanses. When you do coffee enemas and your body's expectorating mucus for a day or two. When you do a gallbladder flush and you have a clear presence or a clear awareness that a multitude of mucus is being blown out of the body and you feel more clear. When your intestines are overloaded with mucus, and that mucus is going into the lungs, when you have two or three colds a year, bronchitis-type colds, pneumonia-type colds, chest colds, and that intestine is bloated and toxic, that mucus is overflowing into the lung. That doctor in that white coat should be noting your mucus titer. You ought to walk out of there, and on that checklist, that doctor should be writing down, patient in danger zones regarding mucoid toxicity. Mucus is overflowing from intestine into lung. Physical exam. That's a physical exam because your body will not sustain too much mucus over the years. Now, the hard science, directly communicating mucus, directly incorporating this notion of excess mucus in the body, in the intercellular spaces, wherever it might be, all the way to disease, the hard science is there. It just hasn't translated yet into your annual physical exam. Have you contoured your diet? Acid, alkaline, fast oxidizer, slow oxidizer, mixed oxidizer? Are you a Vata, a Pitta, or a Kapha? Are you wood, air, earth, water, fire? Have you taken all of these characterizations from that to blood typing? Is the whole scope of categorization something that you actively engage in? Your doctor should be. Your doctor should be noting you're a Vata, you're a uric acid diathesis, your tongue is such a way, you're effectively made of more metal than wood. He notes your blood type, puts all of those together to try to create a profile for you. And as you engage that profile through trial and error, as you take that doctor's advice, as this goes down written, this is what my patient presents with. This is what they present with. This is what I put into the notes. This is what I advise them. And then in that next physical exam, 6 months later or so, do those recommendations, based upon what we write in the physical exam, did that translate into a better feel, a better way of being? Could you see the advantage of adding carbohydrate, of taking carbohydrate out, of eating in little bits per day, of changing your slow-paced exercise to fast-paced or your fast-paced to slow-paced? All those recommendations are exercises for you. Exercises that the doctor, the man in white, should have mastered so that you can start to experiment in the time between the physical exams, so you can contour all of these typings These typings that I went into in about three or four of the last shows should come down to an exercise for you to contour those typings to you. Number six, how much oxidative stress have you been hit with? Oxidative stress. Your doctor should be getting a sense of, based upon your occupation, based upon your genetics, based upon where you live, based upon what your hobbies are, how many free radical hits to your cells do you suffer each day? How many, and what to do about it? How many is a function of, well, your occupational toxicity. The free radical is a moiety. It's a compound that's hungry for electrons. Very often, oxygen, that's where we get the term oxidative stress, is an atom that runs around looking to pick off electrons from neighboring compounds. Those neighboring compounds include your cells. And believe me, your cells don't want to give up their electrons. Your cells don't want to suffer oxidative stress. Your cells don't want to suffer free radical damage. But each and every day, depending upon where we live, where we work, what we do for a living, how much our stresses are on every single level, you suffer the myriad, the totality of oxidative stress, free radical damage to the cell. There is no pathology. There is no disease. Now remember, you're walking into a doctor's office to get a sense of how your health, where your health stands. What is your health status? Not on the day that you get the disease, but on 5 years or 10 years before you get the disease. By the time you get your disease, the early symptom, where the cell that has been so stressed, that is so free radical damaged, that is so oxidatively destroyed, by the time that cell starts showing a dysplasia or a change in its own morphology, a dysplasia, not a cancer, not a disease, but just the beginning of the cell adapting in unproductive ways to the heavy free radical damage, at that point, you want to be told. Because the next step, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years down the line, after you exhaust your hormonal system, next year or the year after or the decade after, too much oxidative stress to the cell is the beginning of disease. Now, we have tests. We have ways of sort of sensing how much damage there is. The first place you go, before you even try to get to tests, tests often that you never get, tests that are available to the public, tests that are available to your doctor, tests that may not have reached the point of sophistication that we want, but long before we do it, shouldn't we have a sense of our occupational toxicity? How many people are on the road for their living? How many people drive a truck? How many people work as carpenters? How many people work in factories? How many people work in hair salons? How many people work in places where the air is filthy? How many people live near the Long Beach port and vicinity? How many people live near the oil refineries of Torrance? How many people live in dark, smoky cities, surrounded in radiation, drowning in cell phones, drowning in computers, drowning in bad air, drowning in bad water, drowning with bad food? And collectively speaking, the full gamut of all the causes of oxidative stress attacking your vessels, your GI tract, your kidneys, your skin, your heart, your joints, your lungs, your brain, all of these organ systems being bombarded, the cells, through a multitude and myriad of ways, because you work at a construction site or you work near, as an accountant, near an oil refinery. And none of this is brought to your attention long before you're sick. And yet, this is the fascinating thing. And yet, if we were to pull out your cell and look at your cell, long before you ever get a disease, we would see you, specific to your brother or your uncle or some friend that lives in another city, we would see yourselves begin to show signs of tremendous breakdowns in the membrane of the cell and intracellularly. we can see the dysregulation in the cell. Now, I want to familiarize you with Geneva Labs. Do your Google search. Geneva Labs, diagnostic testing. They can give you antioxidant profiles, for instance, glutathione, CoQ10. We can measure them in the blood. Antioxidants neutralize free radicals. It's just not enough. It's really not enough. It's short-sighted to simply think because you pop a couple of capsules into your mouth of a CoQ10 or an alpha-lipoic acid or a dihydrolipoic acid or a glutathione. It's short-sighted to think you're covered. Really, the smart money is on minimizing it in the environment. And we say all too often, I can't do that. Well, listener, I implore you to do whatever you can do, whether it's this year, next year, or in 5 years, to get yourself to a place where you can grossly reduce your exposure. Now, what does that mean? Well, certainly it means being profiled, and I just gave you a lab test through Geneva Labs. There are other tests in holistic medicine that give us a sense of this. But more than anything else, understand that the air has got to be purified. And you've got to find the money to spend on an air filtration system. But I'm talking about one that gets the small particulates. Go to Google, do a search on IQ air filters. IQ air filters. They cost, to really get the small particulates, the kind of particulates that even your best air purifiers, okay, overlook, that they aren't designed to catch. IQ air filter, do a Google search on it, because they'll get the tiny particulates. Now, people in public health, people that study this, study the air. They study the air in very intense ways. When you take a master's degree in public health, one of the parts of the curriculum is to really understand the net effect of toxicity in the air. And toxicity in the air is generally a matter of small particulates that the lining of the bronchial tubes cannot capture. So they get into the lung. From the lung, they get into the bloodstream. And you can see these things floating around in the blood with certain types of tests. The air will bring in a phenomenal amount of free radical. So one thing you can do is make sure you filter your air. The other thing you can do, where you're going to find lots of free radical floating, is filter the water. The next thing that you can do is make sure that you don't live near places that are particularly toxic. Now, that's really not intuitive. If somebody lives within 1 mile of a freeway, studies in public health show that if you're that close to the freeway, within a mile, that the concentration of poison there, okay, is many times higher than 5 miles away. And just that little mile makes an enormous difference in regarding the amount of free radical damage in the blood. So when you select an apartment, when you select your condominium, when you select your home, one of the things you've got to be focused on is just how far you are away from intersecting freeways. And if you're mobile enough and you haven't bought a home, you've got great facility there. You've got a wonderful, wonderful opportunity to make a move before you get sick. Los Angeles still has enough land and enough areas that are relatively clean, and you've got to measure that. So if you're living in Torrance, if you're living in Long Beach, if you're living in Huntington Beach, if you're living in Redondo Beach, you could be living in some of the mountains down in the Southland towards Orange County. You could be living in some of the mountainous areas up towards Santa Monica and the Pacific Palisades in Malibu. And every single city meters it out this way. Free radical damage creates inflammation. Inflammation brings in fibrin. Fibrin is scar tissue. Scar tissue in between the cells will build in the connective tissues. One of the first places you're going to find the net result of too much free radical damage is in the connective tissues of the body. As a way to measure the amount of fibrin or deposition of scar tissue because of free radical damage is to feel, is to literally palpate the soma of the body, the musculoskeletal system. Now, this is not a soft statement. You can tell toxicity in the tissue if your doctor's trained to touch the tissue. We say if the tissue cannot peel to the bone, then the tissue's too scarred. Now, this is not far-fetched. Literally, in a physical exam, a patient should sit on a table and be touched. And the hand of the physician should be working through the musculoskeletal system to see if it peels to the bone. That is a measure of inflammation in the tissue. That's a measure of how much fibrin has deposed itself into the blood, because there is a tangible, palpable shift in the way somebody's tissue feels if they've absorbed too much fibrin into the tissue. And that fibrin is the way the body buffers inflammatory stress, and inflammatory stress is created from free radical damage. So if you were to go to a doctor, and let's say you worked in Long Beach, and let's say you worked in construction, let's say you drove some sort of delivery vehicle, let's say you drove a truck, let's say you were a welder, let's say we knew, well, you were a hairstylist, let's say you were an oil painter, let's say you were a lawyer, but you were a lawyer near an oil refinery. Let's say you were a lawyer near an oil refinery that lived near the Long Beach port. Let's say your profile told us, by definition, that you had to be exposed to many, many, many free radicals. Let's say your diet suggested the same. And let's say we ran your blood in Geneva, at the Geneva Diagnostics Lab. Let's say we found that the measurable levels of CoQ10 and lipoic acid circulating were very low. Let's say we found upon palpation that your tissues were clogged. Let's say they were inflamed. Let's say you had musculoskeletal symptoms. If you add all that together, you've profiled somebody for a greater amount of oxidative stress to the tissue. Now, you can't go so far as to biopsy that cell, and you can do those things. But if you run these types of terrains on animals and then biopsy their tissues, you'll find, and scientists do find, a mass increase in the amount of oxidative stress to the cell. A biopsy is not so invasive a procedure. And in science, yes, it's hard to understand for some, but in science, when we take animals, and many of our studies come from animals, as you know, and we increase the amount of what we suspect free radical damaging entities, whether we put them in the air, we put them in the water, we put them in the food, we can measure the descending, we can measure the deficit of the antioxidants in the blood because they're being used up by the free radicals. And then we can go into the cell and look at the damage in the membranes of the cell per organ. And these things have been worked out. Now, we always make this assumption that when we jump to in vivo in human beings, that we've taken this massive leap. Well, you see, that's to be interpreted. But when across the board, in so many lines of different types of animals, exposed to so many levels of oxidative stresses, we can see depleting amounts of antioxidant in the blood and increasing amounts of cell damage. We know we have an equation. And when we can correlate that in people, just through trial and error, to increasingly suggestive levels of tension in the body as a result of fibrin deposition, we can start to profile people. So in short, based on your job, based upon how much oxidative stress we suspect from toxicities, from cell phones, from computers, We can take the leap through testing and through palpation into just what your oxidative profile actually is. The autonomic nervous system. Every single stress to the body results in a response through the glandular system. That glandular reserve, what we call cortisol, and the other hormones, to rebuild deranged tissues. As the tissues break down, as life is what life is, and your body suffers certain types of damages from all reasons we've been through so far, your neuroendocrine system is called to the rescue. It rescues you in an inflammatory, in an anti-inflammatory process through the deposition or the release of cortisol into the bloodstream. Purpose of cortisol is to counter that stress. But the ability of the glands to repair themselves, the glands that you depend on as buffers to all these stresses, the ability of your glands to recover is mediated through your neurological system. When we say, when we profile somebody as to whether they're capable of shifting, of transitioning into the parasympathetic nervous system, and again, if you look at the website, straighttalk.cc, I have pictures there, picture number 8 and picture number 9 and picture number 10, giving you a sense of what we mean by the autonomic nervous system. The sympathetic nerves to the cell and the parasympathetic nerves to the cell. When that cell is under too much stress chemically, emotionally, biomechanically, when that cell is under too much stress in that organ, that cell will counter off dependency on the hormonal system, cortisol. It'll depend on the sex hormones to repair tissue. It'll depend on the thyroid hormone to speed up the acceleration of any process the cell needs to rebuild itself, to repair itself, to function under stress. So that stress stresses the glandular system. The glandular system repairs based upon your ability to shift into the parasympathetic state. And we've done shows on this. And in short, that means, does your body know how to get into that deep state of repose? Now, we can talk about that theoretically, but in the function of the body, it means that the meridian has evolved, that the bodily processes evolve to where we say the meridians start to flow. We say the electrical fields start to decongest. We say that the body moves chi. We say that when we put the finger on the acupressure point, there's a positive response. We say that when you stretch the tissue, there's a positive response, that the body relaxes. If we hook up machines to measure the response to all the exercises of relaxation, those machines will tell us the blood pressure's gone down. The body's ductal systems have relaxed. The digestion improves. The mood changes. There are more positive chemicals, more endorphins secreted in the blood. Now look at that profile. Think about your physical exam each year. What's the stasis of the blood? What's the condition of the biliary system? What's the pH? What are the occupational toxicities? How much radiation is the person exposed to? How much oxidative stress is the person under? How much reserve through the neuroendocrine system do they have to combat the oxidative stress? Is the oxidative stress accelerating? Is the person capable? Have they trained themselves over year one physical to year two physical? Why are we being bothered by cholesterol? Next show or the show after, we're going to go after cholesterol again. We're going to suggest, we're going to create a cardiac profile for you that you can trust. Not what you're being given now. Not the short-sighted one. Why are we focusing on cholesterol and not oxidative stress? And not the fact that over 5 years, the stresses oxidatively or in terms of free radicals to your body are mounting. Why aren't we measuring that you've moved out of sympathetic balance, autonomic balance, and into sympathetic dominance. You've lost the ability to relax, and your doctor hasn't caught that. Your doctor remembers you 5 years ago as a person who knew how to go to that place that it's critical that we learn to divine. And you can no longer do that. You've been through a divorce. You've been through an illness. You've been through an accident. You've been through some sort of trauma. You had to get a second job, and now you're working 90 hours a week. And we can see the stress is building up and reflecting it in the oxidative damage to the cells. These are the things we should be focusing on. Schumann waves, Hartmann lines, the good rays, whether they envelop the earth from the earth's magnetic field that surrounds it in the sky, or whether it's coming off ley lines from the center of the earth. Are you living or are you working in the Bermuda Triangle, so to speak? Or are you living in a place where, well, in olden times we would build churches? Where the dog lies is where we build our farm. That's not the Bermuda Triangle. When you course a territory for an apartment, when you decide to buy a house on a piece of land and build, as you make that decision, the decision that you make can bring you prosperity or it can hurt you. That is not esoteric. Where you live can cause disease. And I mean simply where you live and what you live in can cut you off from the Schumann waves from above, from the Hartmann lines. Where you live, Eastern medicine had a perception of. They called it the Vastu. They called it the Feng Shui. And we can fiddle around with how we arrange our home, and yes, that might well be important. But understand that biophysics, the entity that will someday bring itself to a superiority over biochemistry, the biophysical studies present today and through the experience of time, through the medical anthropology, so to speak, cultures have always understood that where you live can bring you health or where you live can bring you disease. Does the doctor, during that physical exam, ask you where you live? Do they ask you, does the house work for you? Ladies, you understand. The women, a more intuitive breed, understand sometimes what happens when you walk into a home, an apartment, and you say to yourself, there's something about this that doesn't feel good to me. And it might be that the rent works and the location's convenient and everything topically seems like it's right. But underneath it, there's something wrong with that dwelling. Women often feel this. It's the intuitive center. More than the intuitive center, it's your sensitivity to your electric field being accosted, being penetrated, being depressed in the presence of the wrong environment. Yes, that's right. When you get sick, when you don't feel well, when something happens, how many times does it relate to a place that you moved to and you just never thought about it? You may have been living there so long that you never thought about it. You may have moved into it just when life looked good on the outside, but if you think back, it just didn't work there. This is a big deal in medicine. Medicine. This is not esoteric quackery. It's just a more subtle medicine. It's a medicine that's preventative. It's the medicine of the future. It is a time-tested medicine. It is by no means left field. It is by no means off the wall. And this is the way you should think. This is the way your doctor should think. This is truly the physical exam you should get. Is the diaphragm open? Can you take a breath? Is breath patent? Is the biliary system patent? Does the chi flow? Is your breath open when you take a breath? Does your entire body relax? Is there a deep, dramatic, physiological shift to when you take a breath? And do you breathe? Have you learned breath? Has any doctor that you've worked with opened your breath? How about taking a physical exam? How about going for a physical exam to your local health clinic, paid for by your insurance or not, and have your doctor say, take a breath, and then have your doctor say, Mr. Smith, you've got no concept of how to connect your breath to your physiology, because if you can't, your autonomics will never balance. And based upon the amount of oxidative stress in your life, as the studies or lab tests or other tests actually show, unless those autonomics balance, you're headed for trouble. How about that? That shouldn't be far-fetched. That should just be on the cusp of the future. But is it? Well, people say it's not scientific. If you study breath, if you study the function of the diaphragm, if you go into what singers, people who sing, people who do opera learn, successful people from Pavarotti to Caruso, from Placido Domingo to the SLU, they all use their breath. Their breath is developed as a vehicle to learn to relax. Lamaze breath, when women are pregnant, to have a comfortable birth, to depend upon their connection to their being at so important a time as that head swells right down the vaginal canal. In that great moment, women have to know how to relax. Lamaze breath is designed to open the diaphragm. We see incidences all over society of the importance of breath. And when it's really on the line, when you've got to learn to bellow out a tune, when you've got to learn to birth a kid with a large head, when really where the money meets the road, where the rubber meets the road, do you learn the importance of these things? So they're there. They're around us. And what does that tell us? It tells us that there's something vital. There's something positive. And if you take it a step further, you find out that the ability to balance the autonomics demands patency through the diaphragm. So is the diaphragm open? Or are you clenching your teeth? Your teeth. Are they being ground down each night? Yes, you're wearing a night guard. But does that night guard stop you from clenching? No, it doesn't. It stops you from grinding. To stop you from clenching, you either have to work with yourself so you stop clenching, or you've got to put, or at least try something like the NTI, see one of my shows. That NTI designed to stop you from clenching. Why? Because clenching will collapse the cranial rhythms. Clenching will throw the first cervical vertebra out of place. Clenching will misalign the bite. Clenching will ultimately degenerate the TMJ joint. Collectively, clenching will make the vagus nerve and the hypothalamus gland stupid. It'll render the high center of your endocrine system, the hypothalamus, useless at scouring the body beyond the speed of light and identifying a cancer cell and identifying a part of the body that needs more repair. The hypothalamus sits there just on top of the sphenoid, just on top of the pituitary, and it searches and it looks for areas of concern within your body's physiology, within the biology of the cell. And when it locates them, it sends the immune system, it sends directions, it sends orders of execution into areas that it targets to repair at higher rates. That is hard science behind that. That is not nonsense science. The hypothalamus emits a frequency. Frequencies can be measured in hertz. At about 7, 8 hertz does the hypothalamus function. That hypothalamus cannot receive its intelligence. It cannot vibrate itself to intelligence off the sphenoid bone if someone clenches. So how can you go to your doctor every year and not have a doctor say, you've got a clenching pattern, I can see the wear pattern in the teeth? We're worried about cancer and disease, from heart disease to cancer to autoimmune disease. We're worried about Parkinson's. We're concerned about neurodegenerative diseases, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, and yet we let somebody slide for clenching. If you look at what clenching is, you would never do that. You have to add that to that list. Then the teeth themselves. Mercury amalgams. Can anyone at this point disagree? Is there one single dentist out there disagreeing at this point? What a fraudulent existence. Well, we did this with cigarettes. We're doing it with mercury fillings. Those things leak. The caries dye stain test will tell us when the amalgam's leaking. The mercury vaporizes to methyl mercury, the methyl mercury. There is so much hard science behind this. It is not debatable. On something like the vaporization of mercury to methyl mercury and its deposition in all sorts of bodies, all sorts of cells, all sorts of organs, metals going into the mitochondria, interrupting the electron transport chain, reducing the intracellular glutathione, and rendering the cell absolutely defenseless to disease, to viruses, to illnesses, to everything, let alone metals. Can't be an argument at this point. Would we argue cigarettes? Then we shouldn't argue mercury amalgams. Are yours leaking? Do you have those big black fillings in there that are 20 years old? You could pull that filling out with your own pair of pliers. And yet, who's telling you this every year? So there you are. You live down near the Long Beach port. I don't mean to pick on the Long Beach port. You live in Manhattan. You live in an industrial section of Baltimore, any city. You live and your what? Your free radical profile, your oxidative profiles produce too much inflammation. That inflammation is evident through testing. It's depleted completely your CoQ10, your lipoic acid. We can measure the amount of it, at least in the blood we can. And if it's significantly depleted, there you are. Free radicalizing all the way to apoptosis, all the way to cell death, all the way to the beginning of some neurodegenerative or some cancerous situation. And in the midst of it, we're adding to it because the leakage from your mercury fillings as methyl mercury is just accelerating and depleting the one great defense to free radical damage inside the cell, and that's intracellular glutathione. And as Boyd Haley, if you see my show on metal and toxicities, Dr. Boyd Haley, biochemist, chairman at one time of the University of Kentucky, notorious in the field of metal toxicity. As he's clearly shown us, the hard science, depleting your reserve of intracellular glutathione. But in that physical exam you pay for each year, is anybody saying to you, your fillings are leaking, fix them? So you can see then, what are you really paying for? You have insurance, and bless that insurance as far as it prevents you from acute damage, emergency medical care. But to prevent illness, to catch it 5 to 10 years before it comes, this is a whole other physical exam. But this is a physical exam that should be moving mainstream. This is a physical exam that can catch it early. And make no mistake about it, there's strong science behind this. The occiput, the atlas, the axis, your cranium, C1, C2. Your skull sits on a bone, the first cervical vertebra. That bone is the atlas. Below that bone is the second cervical vertebra. That bone is the axis. Can you shift them on demand? Can you shift them on demand? That's a test you should be given. You're given all sorts of muscle tests in your physical exam. We want to know if your motor skills are good. We give you and we do neurological examinations. Within those physical exams, we should be given an exercise. And that exercise should ask us to shift the occiput from the atlas. Shift the occiput, the skull, from the first cervical vertebra. It's a certain kind of stretch. I've covered it in my past shows. If you're new to the show, get on the website, straighttalk.cc, not .com. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. This is a 20-part physical exam, the one you should be given. And included in it, you should definitely be given an opportunity to show your doctor that you can move the occiput off the atlas. And what are we measuring in that moment? We're measuring the shift in your physiology. We're measuring the release. We're measuring your body enjoy a very deep state of relaxation. Can you move yourself into that state? Can you please your body in front of your doctor? Well, your animals show you this all the time. This is the fascinating thing. If you pet your cat, I'm always going to go to this. If you pet your cat, if you pet your dog, they immediately show you that the pet, that the physical touch to the animal makes them change their physiology. They purr. They get soft. They drool. Their eyes change. Their expression changes. Even the dog makes certain noises. Their bodies get soft. They lie down and they completely expose themselves. That's a physiological shift to a palpatory diagnostic tool. When you pet your dog, that is a diagnostic test. You don't think that way, but that's, in a sense, what it is. You're determining whether or not that animal will respond, because you know that there's a certain healthy response. That's what your doctor should be doing to you. Your doctor should be putting you in stretches. Your doctor should be putting you in all sorts of exercises. In this case, the critical exercise of, can the occiput shift off the atlas? Why? Okay, you got it. Get to the website, straighttalk.cc, and tell me why shifting the occiput off the atlas is so important. The first two people that get in, you got it. That free quantum trio. That's the coral, that's the aloe, and that's the vitamin D, so you can shift your pH. The first two people that can tell me why it's so important for the doctor to know whether you've got occipital patency, whether you can shift your occiput off your atlas, and what the significance of this is to the body, the vital significance to your cells to prevent disease states. What am I getting at? That's the first two that get to the website and give me the answer. Wonderful. Sleep. Right in front of our face. Sleep. Are you getting up once or twice a night to urinate? Are you waking up because you're just waking up and you don't know why? Are you finding it very difficult to get to sleep? Are you accepting the fact that it's normal to get up twice a night? Have you been getting up once to twice to three times a night for so long that you can't remember when you didn't? That all your friends do, isn't that normal to you? I would live in the woods in a hut before anything would interrupt my sleep. That's the advantage you have when you understand the depth of the significance and importance of sleep. I would literally live in the woods. I would move out of a city. I would close my practice. Nothing can affect my sleep. Nothing. Nothing's worth it. I don't think there's a single more important factor. The book, Lights Out, by Brent Formby. I put the book on the website by Brent Formby. Formby's got three PhDs. He wrote the book Lights Out. T.S. Wiley does the sort of editing, does the translation from science into English. The book tells you that sleep controls everything. Yeah, we know sleep makes your hormones. And I'm not talking about 5 hours straight. Let me clarify that. That's what we settle for because we don't want to be too harsh. Because life is life, and sometimes you just can't sleep, so you can't. That's understood, but the truth is, if you're not sleeping straight, where you bounce out of bed with energy, no joint pain, to the point where you just feel invigorated like you did as a teenager, the sleep's not optimal. If your doctor watches your sleep habits change over 1 year, 3 years, 5 years, that doctor's got to make that statement. Are you holding emotions in your body? Do you just want to scream, and every single day you feel it in your solar plexus? You feel it in your heart. You feel it in your throat, but you just can't get it out? Are you stuffing it and stuffing it and stuffing it and trying to make it go away, but it just doesn't? Are you filled with rage? Are you filled with fear? Are you filled with sadness? Are you filled with grief? How much emotion are you holding in your body? Your doctor needs to know that. That dialogue has to occur. Because everybody's doing it on some level. We just bury it way deep down inside. Well, you can do that after 60. You can't. Sooner or later, it's going to pop up. Sooner or later, it's going to bite you. Now, look at that. Look at that. Look at that 20-point test. That's what you ought to be paying for. 714-850-1007. 714-850-1007. If you're off track and you want to make a serious choice in your life to put it together, make that call. 714-850-1007. Sit down. If you can't come in, if you can't make an appointment, sit down and go through this show again, straighttalk.cc. If you can do that, maybe you'll come to the class. Our classes are almost closed now. We run three. We teach. We make it cost effective. You just got to put the time in then. Health converts to prosperity. It really does. How you can learn this out of a book is beyond me. What you've gotten today is a compilation of many years of study, many years of experience. And you should take this in whatever shape and form you can to your doctors in your hospitals and bring this to them. Ask them to run the tests. Blood viscosity, biliary patency, pH, different lab panels showing the amount of CoQ10, the amount of glutathione, tongue diagnosis, any of the holistic tests, from the microscope to the eye to the pulse to the tongue, bring them in. Absorb what's useful. Throw out the garbage. There is no test that's infallible, but get a profile. Consider your occupational toxicity. Consider your EMF. Consider where you live. Consider your emotions. Consider your breath. Consider getting a real physical exam once or twice a year. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. It's been my pleasure. 714-850-1007. We will see you next week. Maybe we'll get to the cardiac profile, the one you should really get. Ciao, ciao.
You've been listening to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Invite your family and friends to the show and learn about Dr. Medici through his website, straighttalk.cc. He'll give you the tools you need to save your health and prevent unnecessary surgeries and harmful drugs. He's dedicated to your ultimate healing. Join Dr. Medici next week at 10 a.m. for more Straight Talk on Health. This show and the information therein has not been evaluated by the FDA, and recommended products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. The information provided on this site is for informational purposes only and is not intended as a substitute for advice from your physician or other healthcare professional.